And Hannah, you've been looking at some interesting things, again on the neuroscience theme, from California. This time they're actually in Washington, D.C., I think, aren't they?
That's correct. Yeah, it's Washington, D.C. And over the last week, over 32,000 neuroscientists from around the world converged for the 2011 Society for Neuroscience conference, which included a whopping over 16,000 scientific presentations.
You'd have to go faster than the speed of light to attend all of those. Presumably it's not intended that you should go to all of them.
I think, yeah, there's a programme tracker and you can pick and choose which sessions you want to go to, but apparently you should be taking your trainers because your feet might hurt at the end of the conference from all the traipsing around.
So what were the highlights then?
So there were a few highlights, and one of the sessions on stress was particularly interesting. Christopher Morgan at the University of Pennsylvania showed that stress experienced by a pregnant mouse can affect the subsequent behaviour of her sons and even her son's sons. So exposing pregnant females to stressors, like the smell of a fox, during pregnancy seems to trigger heritable changes that make subsequent generations of males more stress sensitive themselves and also have lower levels of the hormone testosterone. The effect, the researchers found, is down to changes in the levels of a family of gene products called microRNAs, which are used to control the activities of other genes. And exposure to stress switches the profile of these microRNAs so that the brain of developing male fetuses express the same gene pattern as the brains of developing females, triggering a feminizing effect. And because the changes are brought about by what are called epigenetic modifications, this is where chemical groups are added to DNA to control the activity of certain gene sequences, the effects are also inherited by future generations. So this shows that mothers exposed to stress at a critical point in pregnancy could adversely affect the brain development of male offspring. That said, we need to stress ourselves that this is a study done in mice and we don't know yet whether the same applies to humans.
Although there are experiments done in humans, not necessarily on the brain, admittedly, but showing that if a female human is pregnant and subject to stress, and I'm thinking there was a paper published in 2008 by Baz Hymans from the Netherlands. He was looking at women's children, and these were women who had been exposed to the Dutch hunger winter during the Nazi occupation of the Netherlands. And these individuals now carry changes in their DNA and genes that control things like weight and the way you handle sugar. And they have much higher blood pressure, a higher risk of obesity, a higher risk of stroke and heart disease compared with other members of their family. And it's thought that this is because of one of these epigenetic modifications.
It seems that epigenetics and neuroscience and behaviour, well, epigenetics seems to be having an increasing effect on our behaviour, and we're really learning a lot more about these changes in the epigenome, as it's called. Another thing that was a highlight at the SFN meeting was a public lecture series called Dialogues in Society, and this year's topic was timely. It focused on how behaviour and its biological bases drive the economy. So Dr. Robert Schiller, who's an economist, together with a panel of neuroscientists, discussed the role of decision-making in driving the volatility of money markets, currencies, stocks and commodities. What they were asking is whether an understanding of the biological mechanisms of reward, anticipation, risk-taking and emotion also plays out in financial scenarios too. And this is a relatively new area of inquiry called neuroeconomics.
Indeed, we've had John Coates on the programme. He's from Cambridge University. He actually did some wonderful studies that he published a few years ago, where what he was doing was looking at the testosterone and cortisol levels, two hormones, in traders on trading floors. And what he found is that people who had higher testosterone took bigger risks and made more money, and people who had high cortisol, because they'd had their fingers burnt financially, tended to be very risk-averse. And he could show that the boom and bust cycle of the financial markets correlates with the levels of these hormones, so it kind of fits together.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. There was also a session on risk aversion and decision-making, which looked at how the brain tries to maximise the sizes of rewards and minimise losses, including in gambling settings. And Danish scientist Dr. Julian Macavano found that a drug called ketanserin, which blocks certain receptors for brain transmitter chemical serotonin, makes people less likely to take a gambling risk, but only after they've already suffered a loss that they judged to be unfair. So according to Macavano, when gambling, people tend to be more sensitive to potential losses than gains of similar amounts, indicating that loss avoidance plays a major role when we make risky decisions. He also points out that the finding may have clinical significance because patients with mood and anxiety disorders, some of which are associated with dysfunctions in serotonin transmission, often overemphasize the impact of negative outcomes.
Thanks, Hannah. I think I'll invest in that pair of trainers before I head to that meeting, but it does sound really fascinating. Thank you for that update.